As the clock struck 11 on the 11th day of the 11th month of 1918, the war to end all wars was declared officially over. 8 million soldiers and nearly 7 million civilians from 32 different nations were dead. And the emotional and psychic demolition that occurred would last far past Armistice Day. The League of Nations, which was created in response to this horrific conflict, put forth a lofty vision to prevent all future wars of this magnitude through diplomacy and compromise. This vision was not to be realized as our reptilian brains urged us into battle again and again over the past 100 years. Today we mark that anniversary and honor those veterans who continue to serve and in wartime and in times of peace, those veterans who were drafted and those who volunteered, those who served one tour and those whose tours lasted a lifetime, those who stayed in the United States and those who were overseas, those who came back bruised and those who came back broken. As we honor all veterans and active service members, it is our responsibility to continue to reflect on the commitment and costs we are asking our young men and women to make. So often when I hear or read about our military people, the word sacrifice seems to be inextricably linked to their lives and to the lives of their families. They give their lives, their freedom, their stability, their mental and physical health, their homes to serve ideals we as society have said are more significant than their individual lives. In so many ways, the American ideals around the ultimacy of freedom and equality have been eroding before our eyes. Freedom of the press, freedom of speech, freedom to assembly, freedom of religion, freedom to escape persecution, the equality of races, of sexual orientation, of religion, of gender, are all under attack. And I wonder, will I do more than rant from the pulpit? Will I do more than hold up signs and make pretty speeches? What would I be willing to sacrifice? My comfort, my security, my position, what sacrifices would I be willing to make to ensure that the evil we are seeing in our country, in the world, does not continue? While I may say I would rather die than live in slavery, I have witnessed many abuses that have limited my and others' freedoms without sacrificing more than a day or two vigils, a day or two speeches, a day or two marches. Each day I am witnessing the loss of people's dignity, sense of worth, hope in humanity. And aren't these essential values worth dying for? I have not even been compelled to risk arrest or incarceration to bring attention to the fact that no one walks 1,000 miles towards a place that does not want him, that has demonized her, that has criminalized them without great fear and desperation. I am very uneasy about the idea of sacrifice. In every dictionary in which I search for an explanation, the number one definition involved a religious ritual. To sacrifice is to offer up an animal or human or some material good to a god. In early religious and cultural traditions, food and plants and other goods were offered up to provide the gods with whatever they needed. However, in the Judeo-Christian tradition, sacrifice morphed to having more to do with obedience, penitence, and glorifying God. In the story of Abraham and Isaac, read by Judy LeGrand, God decides to test Abraham's loyalty and obedience. his fear of God by commanding him to sacrifice, to stab to death his son in God's name. I often wonder about the lack of argument that Abraham fails to put up. He seemingly docilely accepts his part in the impending death of his child. My first reaction to this story has always been, I have not met one parent, not one seriously flawed, greedy parent that would, mentally ill parent, who would kill their child just to show God loyalty. I have, however, known addicted parents, parents living in extreme poverty, and sociopathic parents who sold their children into slavery, who trafficked their daughters and sons for money, for drugs, for the delusion of a better life. But I do not think that's what this story is about. I have often heard people defend this story because God does not, in the end, require Isaac's death, but the willingness of Abraham to follow his will is enough. And yet, this is not the only biblical account of a parent sacrificing a child. Just to prove the power of God. Now, most people have not heard the story of Jephthah and his unnamed daughter. In Judges chapter 11 tells the story of Jephthah, a military commander who has overcome his illegitimate beginnings as a son of a prostitute and rises to become a leader in Israel. Now, one day in the heat of battle, he promises God that he will sacrifice the very first thing he meets when he returns home victorious. He is victorious. And when he returns home, the first thing he meets is his beloved daughter. But unlike Moses, God does not stay Jephthah's hand. For his loyalty and praise, Jephthah is not promised generations that will produce or promulgate like stars in the sky or sand on the beach. This young woman's death and life was so insignificant that not only is she sacrificed like an animal upon the altar, but she is never named. In the Christian tradition, what is called sacrificial theology developed around the crucifixion of Jesus. Jesus was sacrificed not because he was challenging the Roman rule or the traditions of the Jewish community through his radical teachings, not because he pointed out those abuses going on in the temples and the hypocrisy of the religious caste. The theology, the reason behind his execution, was to redeem the world. God sacrificed his son as an act of atonement for the sins of other people. Jesus is murdered because others broke their promises, their covenant with God. This is a theme repeated throughout the New Testament and history. Individuals and whole races condemned to death, suffering, or poverty and discrimination as punishment for another's disobedience to God, or in more modern terms, punishment for not being part of one group deemed worthy. One of the former rituals during the days of atonement, as described in Leviticus, was to select a goat as a symbol of the community's sin, set it on fire, and send it out into the wilderness to die. A scapegoat is one who is blamed or punished for the sins of others. In the New Testament, Jesus is the scapegoat. Romans chapter 5 explains, just as sin entered the world through one man, meaning Adam disobeying God by eating the forbidden fruit, how much more did God's grace and the gift that came by the grace of one man, Jesus Christ, overflow to many? For just as though disobedience of one man made the many sinners, so also through the obedience of one man, the many will be made righteous. Jesus' excruciating death on the cross was the punishment and redemption of all who disobeyed God. I'm not sure there is a great difference between the early biblical tradition of sacrificing a life to show obedience and loyalty to God and the military tradition of sacrificing one's life for your country. And I wonder if today there is anything truly worthy of surrendering the preciousness of one's life for, when so much of our higher ideals have been corrupted by greed, co-opted by the usurping power from the masses, and using it to oppress others. How do we ask our young men and women to sacrifice their lives for oil, for control, in order to punish those who disagree with us, to protect our own interests above all others? Freedom and equality may indeed be our country's highest ideals. And what about freedom from tyranny? Freedom from oppression, freedom from hunger, freedom from being used and denigrated. What about the equality for all of brown and black people, of women and transgender people, of people who are gay, lesbian, and bisexual, Jewish people, and people who are not Christian? I know of three young people, two young men and one woman, who are excited about joining the military. And I still wonder, how can we ask them to head to the border to intercept, detain, and possibly engage in physical conflict with a group of desperate migrants looking for sanctuary? How can we ask these young people to possibly go into Iran and punish them for their civil rights abuses when we are allowing the murder of unarmed black and brown people? When our government is talking about stripping U.S. citizens of their rights, separating families, disenfranchising hundreds of thousands, condoning the murder of journalists to further our economic interest. The threats to our highest ideals, the threats to our lives, are coming not from without the United States, but from within. Our Unitarian forebears rejected original sin and sacrificial theology. They asserted that every child that's born is born without sin, and that Jesus was a radical activist who challenged the prevailing norms of obedience and silence in the face of grave injustice. He was killed not because of Adam's sin, but because of the sins of the people who broke the human covenant to love one another, to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, to seek justice, to serve mercy, and to embrace humility. This, to me, is the same reason Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was murdered, to protect the privilege and power of the elite. He refused to remain silent on injustices occurring to people of color, to poor people, to our military in Vietnam. Both he and Jesus gave their lives not without fear and doubt, not to God's glory, but because their conscience demanded that they speak out, that they align their values with their faith and action in the world. Now, I'm fairly certain that both men would say their faith in God was a significant motivator and at times a significant comfort. But their sacrifice was for the glory, the salvation, the liberation of humanity. Too often the image that comes to mind when I think about sacrifice is the scene from The Dragon Slayer. How many of you have seen The Dragon Slayer? Almost nobody. Oh, there you go. My age. That's an age thing. The Dragon Slayer was a 1981 movie in which unmarried young village women are offered up as meal to appease a fire-breathing dragon. All of the village virgins, it's always virgins, have their names added to a lottery, and then one name is picked to be the dragon's meal. There is a scene where the ruler's daughter discovers that her name has been left out of the lottery every year and substitutes all the names of the young women for her name. Instead of being forced, in the name of justice, for herself, for her own dignity, she volunteers. And even when her father tries to have her saved, she bravely walks into the dragon's lair. In an effort to unpack my disquiet over the idea of sacrifice, I looked at the definition of service, because we call people in military in service, doing service. And the definition to serve is to be of use. To serve is to be of use. I like this definition. Most of us want to be of use. To feel as if we're doing something that has meaning, that helps another. I think of service as chosen compassion for all, including yourself. Serving others does not ask you to ignore your own needs, goals, or worthiness. Serving asks you to put on your mask first, as they say on an airplane, and then help others with their masks. Where there is an understanding of suffering with sacrifice, even through pain or loss or deprivation or death, serving can be joyful, rewarding, transformational. I saw one explanation online that suggested service is having 20 euros and giving 10 euros to someone who clearly needs it, and still having enough money to get home and feed your family. Sacrifice is having 20 euros and giving 10 euros to someone who needs it, and in doing so, you don't have enough money to get home and feed your family. Many of us here have been drawn to service vocationally as teachers, librarians, nurses, doctors, lawyers, financial advisors, ministers, religious educators, environmental engineers, and others of us have been called to serve through volunteering at church, at the Democratic Party, through Meals on Wheels, with women's groups and historical societies, at hospice and driving friends to doctor's appointments or knitting blankets for those with cancer. The need to be of use is so compelling for some of us that we feel kind of out of our element or anxious when we're not doing something. When I talk to young men and women considering joining the military today, the ideals they lift up about are more about service to others and themselves than sacrifice. Some are joining to develop tools and receive the education that will better their lives and the lives of their families. Some are joining because they want to be of use to others. Others because they believe in doing their part, their duty for the community. Some want to see the world. Some are joining to serve their highest ideals. Some are joining for glory and the thrill they imagine involved in military service. Most are doing so voluntarily. No one is asking them to give up their lives, to lay down and meekly be murdered for a greater, more sacred, more worthy cause. Now let me say, I am not saying that the military men and women and their families do not sacrifice their lives, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, for all of us. They do. I am not saying that their sacrifice is not worthy of gratitude and respect. It is. But our faith teaches that unless we are working to ensure peace, to ensure justice, to find another solution, to uphold the values and ideals we say we cherish, we have no right, to ask someone to give their lives for us. To serve is to give one's life not for a higher cause, not for a more worthy person or deity or ideal. To serve is to give your life, to risk everything, to be of use to yourself and others, to recognize our interdependence, our need for one another, our need to be free and equal, and to use the tools we have to enable that to happen. Otherwise, the price is too high. Those men and women who served during World War II, who came home, were bruised and battered, but knew they had participated in saving millions of lives, stopping evil incarnate in his tracks, preventing the decimation of the world. While those women and men who served in Vietnam came home broken and hurting, not understand why their sacrifice was not celebrated. And those who did not survive the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan sacrificed all for revenge, for oil, for power. None of these negates their sacrifice or their faith in what they believed they were fighting for. It's not their crime, but ours. And I do not believe in sacrificial theology. Our responsibility today, 100 years after the end of the war, to end all wars, is to embrace Woodrow Wilson's League of Nations dream, to use all innovative means to solve conflicts before we offer up our young men and women on the altar of war. We honor our veterans not just with gratitude, but with ensuring they get good medical and mental health care. We honor our veterans by creating a beloved community here, where justice and fairness and equality truly are the culture of America. Today, we stand and dedicate ourselves to furthering the dream of real peace, true service, deep love.